Chumba.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Work moves fast. From emails and reports to proposals and updates, you're expected to think clearly, write confidently, and get it right the first time. And every message counts. That's where Grammarly comes in. It gives you everything you need to think, write, and finish in one place, or anywhere you type and text. You'll never have to switch tools or tabs. Grammarly's AI agents are built for how you work and where you work, so you can find the right words, adjust your tone, and predict how your message might land before you hit send. Your ideas will get a boost while still sounding natural, credible, and just the way you want. For nearly 17 years, Grammarly has been the standard for responsible AI. It's the premier writing tool that 93% of users trust to get more work done. In a world of generic AI, don't sound like everyone else. With Grammarly, you never will. Download Grammarly for free at Grammarly.com. That's Grammarly.com.
Hello, and welcome to a new live episode of Realpolitik. I am your host, Firas Mahdad. As usual, this is another live episode. Please step in with any questions, comments that you might have, and I will read them at the end, as I normally do. Today, we are going to be talking about the preparations for war with Iran, and why is this happening, what does it all mean, and how does it look like ending up? Because striking Iran is a pretty complex task. Now, as you can see from the map that Samson is showing you here, this is Iran and the wider Persian Gulf region. Geographically, Iran looks like a fortress. It is not really invadable, except for the southern part of the country, the southwestern part of the country to be precise, where you would need to build up a ground force in Iraq. And the reason that I say that is that as you look at this map, you see that there are these endless mountain chains sort of protecting the Persian heartland. And then there is this kind of salty desert here in the middle. And the logistics of just sending ground troops into a country like that are incredibly difficult. That's why the Iraqis struggled so much during the 1980 to 1988 Iran-Iraq War, which was really focused on this area, the flat area by Ahvaz that has a lot of Iran's energy resources, actually, and that is, in fact, relatively invadable. Whereas beyond that, you hit these mountain chains, and then for any ground force, it becomes incredibly difficult. So what we're looking at realistically is a series of airstrikes. And the Americans have been building up their capabilities all over the region. CNN has a decent summary of the buildup here. What you see first is a huge number of American bases and presence all over the region. You also see the movement of the Abraham Lincoln carrier strike group. You see a lot of new aircraft that are there for surveillance. You see a significant number of destroyers and Aegis cruisers that are there to be able to intercept Iranian missiles and fire into Iran. You see a buildup of multiple new air wings. And a lot of this buildup is actually focused on places like Jordan, which is probably going to be the area from which the U.S. strike comes, because you have this empty airspace over Syria and Iraq where there isn't much air defense. You can get straight into Iranian air defenses here. And the Iranians, in order to target Israel, have concentrated their own missiles pretty much in this area and along the mountains here, with a plan to be able to close the Strait of Hormuz, which we're going to talk about, and with a plan to strike into American bases. Again, given the distances, this is an ideal location to hit the bases in the UAE, Bahrain, Qatar, Oman. There's a naval refueling station here. Kuwait has a bunch of American bases, all of these locations. So you see the Iranian missiles are concentrated all along the west and south of the country, whereas a lot of the nuclear assets are deeper inland, including in the vicinity of Tehran, the capital, which sits right around here where I'm moving the mouse. So the Americans are engaged in this buildup. It looks like it's going to be an aerial strike. They've deployed the kind of electronic warfare aircraft that they would need to be able to do this. These are the EA-18 Growlers, which sort of are helpful in suppressing enemy communications and air defenses and so on. And with those, the U.S. can try to shut down communications. They've pre-positioned a lot of refueling aircraft. You need to refuel right outside Iranian airspace, go in, strike, go out, refuel again, and then return to bases. And the plan looks like it's first to suppress Iranian air defense systems and then strike at various key targets and then see what happens. And obviously, in anticipation of pretty big waves of Iranian missiles coming in, the U.S. is boosting its air defense. And they've deployed new THAAD system, Terminal High Altitude Area Defense. They've deployed Patriots, which proved to be ineffective against a lot of the Iranian missiles. And they will use their own aircraft to intercept the drones, which travel slowly over longer distances, so they can be more easily intercepted this way. But it's worth remembering a few things. The first thing is that the IRGC has been planning for the Americans trying to launch a decapitation strike against Iran for some time. The IRGC is the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps. It's not actually the Revolutionary Guard Corps. It's the Revolution Guard Corps because it's supposed to guard the revolution rather than just export it. But anyway, that's just a minor thing that gets on my nerves when people mistranslate these kinds of terms. And part of their preparation has been to decentralize their own command so that if the head leadership in Tehran were annihilated, the regional branches of the IRGC would continue to operate and would remain in control of the country. And they would be in various underground bases all over Iran. And from these bases, they would continue firing until they got a command to cease fire, essentially. So they would be able to fight independently of the command structure. And that's how we saw Hezbollah fighting against Israel, where after the various decapitation strikes, which were incredibly successful, on the ground, in terms of ground fighting, and in terms of the short-range missiles, Hezbollah was not disrupted. And what the Americans would hope to do would be to take out the air defense systems first. And then having taken out the air defense systems, they would then try to identify the entrances of the underground bases that the Iranians have built and pretty much seal the Iranians in their bases. Now, these bases have logistics equipment to enable them to open new tunnel entrances, even while a war was ongoing. But if you flood the zone with surveillance aircraft, you can detect when this is happening. The issue really is an issue of scale, because detecting Hezbollah opening new tunnel entrances in an area as tiny as South Lebanon — here is South Lebanon, you're looking at a very small area, 40 kilometers wide, 40 kilometers long, absolutely tiny — is not comparable to identifying the possibility of new tunnels being opened all along this geography, where some of the locations of the underground bases would not actually be known to the attackers. And so that creates new complications. And the Iranians went as far as to develop new kinds of concrete that would allow them to withstand airstrikes so that only the heaviest ordnance, which is in limited supply at the end of the day, would be effective against their systems. So that's what you're dealing with. But then there's the question of why is this happening? I mean, there's the United States on one side of the planet, and there's Iran on pretty much the other side, and the Iranians don't want to close oil exports for the region because that means that their own oil exports can't go, and because it means that the Chinese would go crazy, so they're fine to let the oil keep flowing. They're not really capable of invading other countries around them. The U.S. can absolutely stop them from, say, you know, the fear when Saddam invaded Kuwait was that Saddam would continue from Kuwait and then seize the eastern province of Saudi Arabia, which is where the oil is, and continue from there to the UAE and be able to do that and be able to sort of dominate the oil exports of Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi, and the UAE. Qatar is not a serious oil exporter. And through that, become immensely powerful and blackmail the world. The Iranians are not in a position where they can invade these countries right now. Like, they just can't do it. And they don't seem to have any plan to do it. So while the US wants to make sure that nobody else controls all of this oil, Iran isn't even trying to do that. And the answer is Israel. That's the only answer. And you see that the top decision makers in Israel are heavily influenced by people like Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel, obviously a Brazilian billionaire who is also a homosexual, whose former boyfriend met a sticky end when he apparently fell from the 17th floor after having invited himself to a party that Peter Thiel and his husband were holding. And Peter Thiel is obviously deeply connected to J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance was working for Thiel early on in one of his hedge funds. And then it was Thiel that financed J.D. Vance's run for the Senate. And then now J.D. Vance is the vice president. In the same way, Trump is financed by the Adelson family, also a Brazilian family. He said that it was because the Adelsons paid him $100 million that he recognized that the Golan Heights, which the Israelis took away from Syria in the 1967 war, are sovereign Israeli territory. And then you have Marco Rubio, who was vetted by Larry Ellison, the owner of Oracle and now TikTok, who basically made sure in his connection to Israel that Marco Rubio would be absolutely loyal to the Israelis. And so he funded him against Trump in 2015 for the 2016 presidential campaign and has been backing him ever since. So you see the situation where the influence of one particular group over American foreign policy is so immense as to get them to engage in another Middle Eastern war, even though Trump's whole rise to power was predicated on no more stupid wars in the Middle East, let's not get sucked into the Middle East again, we don't want to do that again. So here we are. The Americans have pretty much placed the assets that they would need to place if they were to go to war with Iran, and they're ready. And now it's a question of, do they, don't they do it? And I'm going to argue that there's a good chance that they don't do it. Because unlike what I've seen on X, where there are allegations that the Epstein files were released in order to embarrass Trump and force him to escalate on behalf of Israel against Iran, my view is the opposite, really. My view is that the Epstein files make Israel look so bad that it helps curtail Brazilian influence over American politics. And it helps Trump negotiate with the Iranians more effectively and impose things on the Israelis that they wouldn't have accepted. Now, before continuing, let's take a quick trip down memory lane. From 2011 onwards, Barack Obama, Trump's predecessor, was doing everything he could to negotiate a deal with the Iranians. And then you got, in 2015, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which was supposed to exchange the full removal of sanctions on Iran for the partial dismantlement of the Iranian nuclear program and placing the nuclear program under permanent international surveillance. I say permanent, even though some provisions of the deal had a 10-year time limit, but there was still enough there that would have allowed the International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN watch body that looks over nuclear affairs globally, to keep monitoring Iran and preventing Iran from actually building a nuclear weapon. What happened afterwards? What happened was that without an invitation from the president, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu went to the American Congress and spoke against the deal and tried to push Congress to fail the deal and to thwart it, except that Obama did not sign it officially as a treaty, so it didn't have to go through the Senate. So to get around Obama trying to get around Congress, what happened was that Congress passed a huge batch of sanctions against Iran that were identical to the sanctions that Iran was under over the nuclear issue, except that they targeted Iran for having the IRGC and backing militias in the region and having a missile program and so on, meaning that Obama could sign a deal with the Iranians, but he couldn't fulfill his part of the bargain and remove the sanctions, meaning that the deal was in fact never fully implemented. So the Israelis have a history of being able to foil American presidents who want to make agreements with Iran behind, not behind their backs, in opposition to what they perceive are their interests. So with the release of the Epstein files, you kind of get something different, which is that if you look at the Epstein files, you see a massive amount of influence for Epstein and the rest of his ethnic network over policy globally that makes Israel look really quite bad. And that can be used by Trump and by allies of Trump in order to reduce the influence of the Israelis and be able to make some kind of agreement. So my take on the Epstein stuff is pretty much the opposite. It doesn't hurt Trump as much as it hurts Israel. And in that sense, it creates some kind of opportunity for a deal, given that the Iranians now see that the Americans are ready to go to war. So that's one thing that I wanted to get across in this. And the Americans have, you know, two options. Either they bomb Iran or try to color revolution Iran. And to some extent, the protests that we saw in Iran showed that the color revolution option has failed. Because it wasn't just the Iranian security forces killing protesters. They did that. They absolutely killed protesters. But then you see some reports online saying that the Iranians actually killed 80,000 protesters. What? That just doesn't pass any kind of sniff test. And if you look at the trajectory of the figures during the Iran protests, which happened, they ended, I think, 1 or 2 weeks ago and had gone on for around 3 or 4 weeks. You saw the first death toll saying 500, and then 1,500, okay, and then 2,000, okay, and then it jumped to 3,000, fine, then it jumped to 20,000, and then it jumped to 80,000. And again, if you go back memory lane, you will remember that when in 1990 and 1991, the Americans were trying to justify kicking Iraq out of Kuwait after Saddam had invaded, you had these lurid stories about the Iraqi soldiers killing babies in incubators in Kuwait. And you had then obviously the weapons of mass destruction stories in 2003. And you had the stories about the Russians kidnapping 20,000 Ukrainian children. All of these things never actually happened. Like, it just didn't happen. And now you're seeing this dynamic where you see people who are very supportive of Israel saying that there were armed protesters in Iran and saying that the protesters, this is from Mossad commentary, saying that the protesters are in open revolution and are seizing weapons and attacking the government. And you see this kind of stuff and you go, well, hold on a second. This was an attempt at color revolutions. And that's what actually happened. And the color revolution failed. And so the regime survived. And since the color revolution failed, the only two possibilities here now are a negotiation with the existing regime or going to war.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.